we do know the importance of hormone receptor status is well known, and the presence or absence of HER2 is also a significant predictive and prognostic factor. So let's hear from our next patient, Cynthia, who was found to have HER2 positive cancer.
I was diagnosed with breast cancer in September of 2003. At the time that I received the diagnosis, decisions had to be made very, very quickly. And these were tough, complicated decisions, which I had to make during a time when I was an emotional wreck. I realized that I had to pull it together long enough to come up with a game plan.
When I found out that Cynthia had cancer, I couldn't believe it. There was no history of cancer in our family.
Because they had been unable to diagnose this one lump, he was very concerned about how they would ever monitor me on a going forward basis. I opted to have a double mastectomy. At the time I went in to have my mastectomy, we did not yet know the biology of the tumor, and we did not know the extent to which the cancer had spread to my lymph nodes. I knew that if I didn't remove both breasts, that I was going to drive myself and everyone around me crazy. I then learned that the tumor was a very aggressive cancer. It was a high-grade cancer. And because it was in the lymphatic system, we were going to have to treat the cancer in a very aggressive fashion. The outpouring of love and support that I received was beyond belief. I had prayers coming to me in every denomination, and I loved it. It really shows you, when you go through something like this, just how kind people can truly be. After I healed from my surgery, I began chemotherapy. It was probably the scariest part of the process for me. I think that after I lost my hair initially, the process became a little bit less frightening. I think that was the hardest part to get over as a woman. I found that when I was taking chemotherapy, there was always sort of a low level of queasiness that I felt. I found that I would get sick to my stomach about once a week. Typically, if a breast cancer patient undergoes a mastectomy, radiation therapy is frequently not required. However, because I had the four positive lymph nodes, it was recommended to me. It was found that Herceptin was so effective in cutting the recurrence rate in HER2 positive early stage breast cancer patients. I chose to have Herceptin, and that was a 1-year treatment process. Other than the annoyance of having to go back into the oncology ward to receive it, I really had no adverse reaction to it. There is certainly a cardiotoxicity risk associated with it. While I was receiving it, I was receiving regular heart scans. There was no heart problem that was picked up during my treatment process. Hormone therapy is taken in pill form once a day, and currently the procedure is to take that pill daily for 5 years. I think that the exercise during treatment probably helped me endure treatment pretty well. The fact that I was able to keep exercising was important to me because I wanted to retain as much of my life and my routine as I possibly could throughout it because I was in this constant battle with cancer and I wasn't going to let cancer take my life away from me. After all of the treatment finally ended, I felt relieved. I was ready to be done. I felt like there truly was nothing else for me to do. And it was time for me to move forward with my life.
Well, central to the role of the considerations around trastuzumab in the adjuvant setting is the HER2 status. The HER2 status is used by the NCCN guideline in three different ways. It's used first as a prognostic factor to estimate women who have more aggressive tumors, tumors that are more likely to recur early and more widely. It's used as a predictive tool to select women who are more likely to benefit potentially from the use of the anthracyclines, doxorubicin or epirubicin, or the taxanes, paclitaxel or docetaxel. And then it's used to select women who are likely to have trastuzumab-responsive disease. If we look at the trials that have been performed in women with HER2-positive disease, it's clear that the addition of trastuzumab adds benefit, and the benefit is substantial. It's about a 50% reduction in the risk of recurrence and about a 35% risk reduction for death. So those are, in oncology, enormous benefits. When we look at the testing for HER2, there are really two different methodologies widely used in the United States. One is the use of immunohistochemistry, so-called IHC testing, that looks for the transmembrane HER2 receptor protein. The other is the fluorescence in situ hybridization test, or FISH test, that actually looks at the number of gene copies of the HER2 gene. And if it's increased in number, it's called amplified. The two tests really, though, should be considered complementary. And by that, I mean that if one comes up with an intermediate result with IHC testing, a 2-plus result, for instance, one can break that tie with a FISH test if the FISH test is not borderline or equivocal. And the converse is also true, that if the FISH test is intermediate, one can look to the IHC testing, and if it's either 3-plus, clearly positive, or if it's 0 or 1-plus, clearly negative, then that can also break the tie. One of the further difficulties here is that we have learned recently that the IHC and FISH testing are actually very difficult tests to do. And it is often the case that laboratories, especially low-volume laboratories doing these testing, don't do a very accurate job of determining the result. And the inaccuracies may be as high as 20% false positive rates for immunohistochemistry, probably a little bit less, but in the same ballpark with FISH testing. And so it's really important that when we do HER2 testing, by whatever methodology we use, that we use a laboratory that is a high-volume laboratory and that has validated their testing methodology within that individual laboratory.
Well, what do the NCCN guidelines recommend for patients with HER2-positive tumor?
The randomized clinical trial evidence is strongly supportive of adding the use of trastuzumab to patients receiving cytotoxic chemotherapy for a treatment of HER2-positive breast cancer. And so in any woman who has axillary lymph node-positive disease, whose tumor is HER2-positive, or in the tumors that are greater than 1 centimeter, HER2-positive but axillary lymph node-negative, trastuzumab is either recommended or can be considered depending upon the woman's other risk factors. Cliff, what regimen would you use to treat this woman?
Well, one of the things that I would first say is that the HER2-positive tumor is really the case of making a silk purse from a sow's ear, because this used to be the worst breast cancer, worst prognosis, poorest response in general to therapy. By placing those patients on trastuzumab, if anything, we seem to be getting a better outcome with that cohort of patients than we get with the average breast cancer. So we've really changed the disease. What we have to figure out in the near future, I think, is whether the specific chemotherapy agent matters or not. From the clinical trials data, we have a backbone of an anthracycline cyclophosphamide, or AC, combination, followed then by a taxane with trastuzumab. And I think that's the most standard evidence-based approach. But interestingly, if you look at the metastatic setting, you start to get hints that maybe just a single agent like docetaxel or paclitaxel with trastuzumab might do the job in this setting. And I think that the big question may not be which specific regimen, but do we really need so much chemotherapy with these patients at all? And this is going to be, I think, a really interesting area of clinical trials in the years to come.
Yes, I want to emphasize that. I mean, this is a true test of the biology of the tumor driven by HER2, and the most important agent here is the HER2 targeted agent, and what it plays with may be less critical than actually providing the HER2 targeted therapy, and whether that's with a specific chemo which optimizes toxicity or even just with hormone therapy alone in some cases may be some of the points we'll look at in the future.
Lori, in terms of minimizing toxicity, tell me how you would go about monitoring cardiac function.
One of the things we learned when combining trastuzumab with chemotherapy in the metastatic setting was that there was an increased risk of cardiac toxicity. And these initial North American trials were designed to have an early stopping rule for cardiac toxicity that exceeded 4%. Unfortunately, none of the trials got into that problem, but there were specific guidelines looking at the measurement of left ventricular ejection fraction at baseline after 4 cycles of AC before commencing with trastuzumab and taxanes, and then following the patients with left ventricular ejection fractions to look for any declines. And so what we do now, we use those guidelines and work collaboratively with the cardiologist. So if there's a decline in the left ventricular ejection fraction, even in the absence of symptoms, we work with the cardiologist, get an echocardiogram, and try to medicate the patients and manage the patients to reduce the risk of severe long-term cardiac toxicity. Now, we have no long-term data so far. What we know is that most of the cardiac toxicity happens early. We're not really sure about the impact of their ultimate cardiac safety long-term, but these patients will continue to be followed.
Well, one of the things that I think that we have to highlight here is this cardiac toxicity, and I have some concerns about the consistent quality of the ejection fraction testing that we're relying on. It's very much like what we were discussing in terms of receptor status testing. One should really have confidence in the quality of the people performing your ejection fractions. Always use the same centers and the same readers to the degree possible.
Well, let's hear a little bit more about what Cynthia had to say about her experience with trastuzumab.
I found Herceptin to be very easy. I really had no side effects at all. And the nice part about it was that you don't lose your hair. You don't have any of the same kind of side effects you have from traditional chemotherapy.
It's worth reemphasizing that day to day, the side effects are really nominal, and patients do very, very well. And I would just highlight that along the way, we learned that the half-life of trastuzumab is sufficiently long that we didn't have to give it every week. The early trials actually did administer it once a week for 52 weeks, so just stepping it down to once every 3 weeks, I think also helped to reinforce a higher quality of life for these patients, make it easier to bear.
Now, in her case, she's actually is offered a year's worth of trastuzumab after her chemotherapy, which is a standard recommendation based on 4 of the 5 trials which showed a benefit to trastuzumab in the adjuvant setting. However, needless to say, the optimal duration of trastuzumab has not yet been worked out. In the FinHER study, only 9 weeks of chemotherapy with trastuzumab actually showed a benefit. And in a European study, they're trying to determine whether 2 years is better than 1 year. So the optimal duration is not quite worked out, but right now the recommendations are for 1 year. One of the other concerns about patients is that they're involved in the decision-making process. So when a patient like this with a high-grade tumor with bad prognostic features who's going to embark upon a year of therapy, that the patient really participates in the decision-making process. And in this patient, we really look at the risk-benefit ratio. And while the investment of time with regard to one's socioeconomic class, whether one has to work and the time off from work and managing their family and responsibilities may seem to be a big burden, it's our responsibility, especially in a HER2-positive patient where the benefit is so high, as Dr. Carlson mentioned, to really help them manage some of these potential barriers with regard to appropriate therapy.